Where is that? Is that tree still here? It was in the courier. Where? No, it was in a. It was. It's over there in the vertical file in the library. It shows you standing next to this huge coffee tree.
Oh yeah, that's out. Yes, that tree's there. But I planted. Did you see my marker out here? I have a marker by beside this tree.
Mm-hmm.
I planted the seed for that tree the day that Julie and Carol signed the bill making it the official state tree.
That's interesting.
Uh-huh.
It's hard to get a coffee tree to grow, isn't it? I've always heard it was. I don't
know
if it's true.
Well, I had no trouble.
You sure didn't.
And then I took two to Florida, and they're in their park there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the history of the tree. I was really in for the coffee tree.
That's good. Well, I'll ask you this famous question that most women don't answer. Do you tell your age?
Yes, I do. I'm 71. I was born September the 15th. 1921.
September the 15th. That's my husband's birthday.
Oh, we'll have to have a party.
That would be fun. We have a lot in common. And you were born where?
Lawrence County, Alabama.
Alabama. How much education do you have?
Well, I graduated from high school, and then I went to Drums Business College in Muskogee, Oklahoma. And took some correspondence courses and all on writing and stuff.
So that's how you developed your writing, through correspondence courses.
Uh-huh.
That must have been effective.
Well, I had worked on a paper in Alabama. That was during the Depression. I worked there and helped pay for my typing lessons. They had this NRA project program. You know, you could, I graded papers for the teacher during my study period, and then I paid for my typing classes. Mm. I liked it. Uh-huh. We had some journalism classes in school too. I liked that. Then we had school newspaper.
You were involved in it. You really had the basics. You just needed more practice.
Uh-huh.
I would think.
And I came here, and I had worked on the paper there too.
Mm-hmm.
The oldest weekly newspaper in Alabama, still in existence. And I worked there, you know, helped get that paper out while I was in school. So just to learn, I got a little ink in my blood.
I'd say you did. Did you say something about your parents were writers?
My mother, well, she never wrote anyone, but they are very, my father was an eloquent writer, and his vocabulary, and he went to school at Drawn's Business School also in Nashville, and he worked at the post office there. But he loved the dictionary, you know.
That was the key, wasn't it?
Uh-huh. And in fact, I just ran across something that he had written when I was doing some research for a book I did on Alabama. I came across this, and I just got that copy. You're not taping this, are you?
Mm-hmm, but that's okay. That's all right.
It's not about Alabama, but...
No, that's all right.
Anyway, it was 1915, and this thing that he had written, it was on the front page of the Moulton Advertiser, you know, an eloquent piece.
You'll find that I'm really a folklorist. I'm interested in your narratives. you know, it's not like I'm just going for specifics here.
Yeah.
We'll cover the specifics, but I like to get at the other things, too.
But he did, and he, you know, he could spell anything. I just, you know, I admired him very much. But...
Now, what year did you marry?
In 1942.
Is that when your travels began?
Well, somewhat. I married a pipe fitter, and we were working on construction jobs and going from state to state and job to job. And we lived in Oklahoma and Terre Haute, Indiana, and different places until he went in service then.
Well, now, when he was working, were you riding?
No.
Or did you have children by then?
No, I didn't have any children until after he came back from service. But, and I didn't go to work until he left. And he went in service in November 42. And so I came down. He wanted me to stay in Kentucky and help take care of his parents because they were old and the brother was gone and the sister was gone. So I stayed in Kentucky and came down to the newspaper office and asked for a job. Well, we'll think about it. And I went to Beaver Dam and talked to the editor over there and we'll think about it. And next week I had a letter from the editor here, and I came down that very day and talked to him, and we talked about getting out a courthouse petition. So I, the next day I had a letter from the Beaver Dam paper messenger, Carlos Emery. And but I had already decided to go to work here, and I stayed and began work right away. I did a lot of research on the history of the county because I had a lot of items related to the courthouse and the county officials and the history of the different communities, and I sold advertising, you know, throughout. I went to Dan Station and sold, they had one store there, and I sold a little $5 ad, and I was on my way, you know.
You know, so that's Dan really Station. That's really what you got you interested in the history.
Yes, uh-huh. I became closely associated with Mr. Fogle, who worked there, and I wrote a lot of articles for the paper on the county and the formation and the early judicial system and the old jails and the old courthouses and the old Hartford Academy and schools and different things like that. And it just kind of grew on me, you know. It just sort of got in my blood. And I became involved then, oh, years ago, in getting historic markers for the county. We had one, I think, in the county. And I've been with that, I guess, since, I don't really remember, but I've gotten all the historic highway markers that we mm-hmm. have. Well, you had to document those, and so that gave me access to some of the history in that area, and they're all over the county. So I enjoyed that, and I felt that was a contribution to the county, and in the same time, I was learning more about the county,
sure.
Serralvo, and, you know, how it got its name, or if ever anyone knew, but, and Fordsville, and working with the paper, I got to scout the county, you know, and I was intrigued by so many of the little names like Sunnydale, you know, and Pleasant Ridge, and tried to find out where did they get this name, Jingo.
Did you find out?
Some of them. Hell's Neck, nobody would know. But Serralvo is a Spanish name. I've forgotten now what that means. But it was believed to have been first settled by some of the Spaniards.
You know, I was intrigued when I read that. It was hard to believe that Spanish people would have been here.
Yes, and they were. Well, you know, they claim there was early Spaniards here and a mound out here close to the river, just about 2 miles west of Hartford, where they had this Spanish mound. And the Indians came in. The Indians really didn't live in this area, but they used it for hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Came from Indiana and Ohio and different places. But anyway, that's how it kind of rubbed off, you know.
Well, then after your husband was out of the service, did you stay here or did you all move
after
out?
After he came back, let's see. Well, we moved here in 46 and bought a house, and I had a baby girl who was born that year, and we sort of made this headquarters, and I went to work again at the paper whenever it was convenient for me. I could go in and go to work.
That was nice.
Uh-huh, it was. And they were very nice to me. But then he wouldn't... Well, we moved to Paducah for a while, and he worked at a plant there. But most of the time, he would drive to Henderson in different areas where construction work was going on, pipe fitting work. And I stayed here and worked with the paper.
How many children do you have?
I have the two. Carolyn, who was born in 46, and John was born in 57.
Oh, that's quite a big difference, wasn't there?
11 years difference, two families. But that kept me hopping, PTA, for almost 24 years. But John is a captain with the Air Force, and he's in Oklahoma. And he thought he was going to be dismissed, but I think they're going to keep him. He's, mm-hmm. He was in with the missile program, and and pretty tight security and all out underground stuff and Cheyenne until they did away with that. And now he's been something else. I really don't know.
What's your religious preference?
I'm a member of the Church of Christ.
Uh-huh. Were you when you were in Alabama, or
yes,
did you change?
I always have been.
Always.
Uh-huh. And my husband.
Well, when you first came to this community, what was your reaction to it as opposed to where you were in Alabama?
I thought it was a very dull, slow-moving, lazy. Well, it was smaller, and it didn't seem to grow until the coal mines opened, and then the cash registers began ringing, and people began occupying all the vacancies, and business was booming. But during the war, most of the men had gone away, and business was slack, and people were worried, and everything was rationed, and it was a slow-going thing. But after the war, and the coal mines moved in from Indiana and around, everything was rosy. Mm-hmm. It grew pretty much. A lot of new houses were built. The population increased. People were more happy. We had street cleaners, and they took more pride in their businesses and attractions. And we had a theater, and we had a lot more things going, you know. But that sort of dwindled away. And
yeah, about when did it start to decline?
Oh, let's see, I would say in the 60s. The coal had maybe late 60s, high sulfuric content, and Peabody was in here mostly, and they brought the largest shovel in the world at that time, the first one that had ever been made that large, and brought it on I've forgotten how many cars from St. Louis, and it was assembled here. But the coal companies just had to move out because TVA was buying the coal, and they couldn't use it because of the high sulfur. I hope that maybe someday they can do something to get that out.
When you first moved here, did you think this was a negative, this county had a negative attitude?
Yes, and I felt like an outsider for a long time. Although I worked and I met a lot of people, I didn't really feel like I had been accepted, you know. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was from out of state when really this was my home. I mean, I had changed it. Mm-hmm. But I did for a while. But as I got to know more people and they got to know me, I think I felt better and began to love the area, you know.
Do you think
friends?
Do you think the attitude was more just an uncomfortableness, or do you think it was really a kind of a downbeat negative attitude here?
Well, I think it was more of a negative attitude in a sense, because I was working with the public and I was an outsider, you know. I didn't get into the ring of things.
I hear, of course, I'm an outsider. I'm an outsider, although I love the county as much as my own county. But to me, things here seem negative overall. There doesn't seem to be an impetus to get things done.
I know it.
And I get frustrated.
I do too.
You can just go 20 miles and you step into momentum and let's get it done. And you come back here and people are just here and they're just not in a hurry and they don't really care if it gets done or not.
They don't seem to have the pride that they need to have. They don't want to promote what we have. They're just, like I went into one business place and the owner was back there asleep one morning, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning. There are a few people who are very ambitious and who want to really do things. I try to pull that in a lot of ways, or to to get people to wake up through the column. I try to write things mm-hmm. like that. Just this week, I mentioned the fact that we had one of the best parades we have ever had during Oktoberfest. More units. But yet, people stood there as if they were watching a funeral procession. And I said, we need some cheerleaders next year.
That's a good point.
That's in my column. That's in my column that came out yesterday. Today.
No, I haven't read it yet, but I will.
Okay. And that's true. I mean, I noticed, I waved at the kids and the cheerleaders, and I don't mean the cheerleaders, the beauty contestants that were on the card. You know, wave at them, they'll wave back. And, you know, put some energy into it. They're out there doing what they're doing, and yet people just stood there, you know, stoically.
See, I haven't figured out why it's this way. I don't know, is it the basic makeup of the people? Or is it because of the economic slump?
I don't know.
I just wondered what your opinion was. I have thought about this in great length for the last couple of years.
Uh-huh.
I even wondered, for example, when the place was first being settled, when the railroad came through, things boomed uh-huh. with the railroad. And then as that declined, it looks to me like the economy sort of went down again. Then evidently the coal brought it back up, and then it's gone down again. Uh-huh. The timber brought it up and it went down. It seems like this county's been raped a lot, to me, economically.
Yeah, it has.
I don't know any other way to say it.
That's exactly.
It's crude, but to me, that says it. And I'm saying to myself now, is this what's made these people so, whatever the word is, I haven't figured out a good word to describe it, but I'm trying to figure out, is it the socioeconomic plight? You know, what is it?
Mm-hmm. I don't know either, but there has been an attitude, I think, ever since I've been here, by some, not by all, you know, oh, well, we'll get business regardless. People are going to come in here and buy what they need, whether we promote it or not, whether we sweep our front walks or not, if we have something they need. Well, that attitude seems to have rubbed off on others.
And the school kids don't have enthusiasm that I've seen. I haven't been in school that much, but when you see the young people, they don't have this get up and go momentum.
Uh-huh. Well, some of them do now. I have noticed that we've had this drive to try to renovate the theater. You've probably read about
it. The courthouse?
No, the theater.
Oh, no, I don't know about that.
The old theater.
Oh, the old one.
Uh-huh.
I know where it is.
Okay. That thing has been badly damaged because the roof leaked and the mayor at the time moved over into the Civic Center building and it was vacant and they didn't seem to care whether the roof fell in or not. But after this mayor came in, they moved out of the community building to save the high price of rent that it was costing the city over there. And they just made do with what they have. Very inadequate place. Mm-hmm. So this theater building is on the National Register of Historic Places. And I have been writing and had campaigns going about Save the Theater. My granddaughter happens to be the president of the drama club at the Ohio County High School. She's a senior. And the theater and Save the Theater goes right hand in hand with the drama club.
Sure.
I got them involved. And right now they're getting coffee cans to distribute around the stores for donations. They're going to do some sort of a little performance, you know, gratis. To promote it. I just got a letter. Today. To save the theater. We have a blueprint of what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was talking to Earl, the mayor, one day about what could be done. maybe have a money tree, maybe just like a gold thing on a wall, you know, and put plaques down for donations and different ways that we can do to raise money, because they have gotten a grant, a matching funds grant, and we've got to, and we'll renovate that building and have a small theater there, preserve that too, with the slope floor and the original, the old stage, you know.
Well, that'd be wonderful.
But I had been writing some articles in the paper about the theater and to save it. But their first, they were going to have to tear it down and build another place, because they had to have more space. There'll be plenty of space available when we can get this done and save that. I do not believe in tearing down a good building. The builder was R.C. McClellan. He died about 3 years ago. He was about 87. He built the courthouse and the jail and the theater building, which was City Hall. It was built at City Hall, too. They had offices upstairs. And he told me that's one of the best, those are the best built buildings anywhere. They are really structurally sound, reinforced with steel and things that you could not duplicate today.
Mm-hmm.
But with the money, you know, well, they just don't build like they built back then.
That's true.
And we've had too many of these historic things torn down.
Mm-hmm.
So we have an old jail. It's now a parking lot. The Hartford Bank and Trust parking lot is the site of the second jail. Mm-hmm. County jail, a beautiful brick structure that was razed for a service station, and it didn't make a go, so they took the service station out and out the parking lot. But anyway, this will go, and I'll do what I can.
Oh, I'm sure you will.
to save that.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have something nice rather than a cracker box.
That's true. I've noticed in my research, it looked like up there around Rosine at one time was a boom town. I guess that was basically from the railroads coming
in
there.
Oh, yes. They had two or three hotels there. And Mrs. Pearl Ferguson's parents, she's dead now, but she has a son in Seattle. But her parents had a hotel there. And she would talk about these people that would get off at the depot. They would come in from Louisville or someplace and spend the night, and they had the balconies there at the hotel, and they would maybe watch the moon and eclipse and different things from these. And she was a school teacher, and she had very vivid memories of the Rosine when in its heyday, and several stores and all, you know. So it was quite a progressive town due to the depot and
mm-hmm.
people stopping up. You know about how Rosine and Kenry got their names and so forth.
Yes, but I'd like you to tell it.
Well, this Colonel Henry D. McHenry lived here on Mulberry Street, down the street, and he owned all this land, which was just nothing but trees all the way to McHenry and all that stuff. But he was in Congress, a congressman, and the coal began, the mines were developing, and he got the railroad from McHenry to Rosine. And his wife, whose name was Jenny, wrote under the pseudonym of Rosine. She wrote poetry, and it was printed in the Courier Journal. So they named the town of Rosine after her. And then, of course, McHenry was named for him. But he was quite a wealthy person and carried a lot of clout, you know, as
mm-hmm.
far as getting things done in Washington. So that's Henry.
Do you know of anyone who has a collection of her poems?
No, but we would love to have those in our museum.
It would be nice to have a copy of them anyway.
It certainly would.
At some point, I had thought about trying to, aren't they at the Filson Club?
There's a Filson Club in Louisville.
It seems, somehow I traced it back somewhere in my notes. I don't remember whether they're there or not. I remember going to the indexes at Western, hoping that the old Courier journals would be on microfiche and I could find them. But I didn't get a chance to go back you know, as far as I needed to, mm-hmm. to retrieve them.
But they should have, they may have the Courier Journal microfilm there at mm-hmm. the Filson.
Mm-hmm.
Back, that would have been in the 1800s that Jenny wrote.
They probably would send us copies. If they aren't at Western, they probably would make us copies of them. I would really like to read them.
I would too.
That picture that was in the paper during the Rosine Bicentennial or what it was, you know, that made you want to just read everything she wrote because
beautiful.
She looked so, she looked elegant and beautiful.
Uh-huh.
And then when you drive through Rosine today and see it the way it is, it really, even to me, it adds to the romance of the whole thing.
Yeah. But
have you ever come across any clues as to why that area up around Rosine is so musical?
No, I don't know if before the Monroe Brothers started, they were inclined to be musical.
Oh, yes, they were. I can tell you that based on the interviews that I've done.
But it's the only area of Kentucky, Ohio County, that's really musical. I mean, everybody. Now, there are musicians in other parts, in Fordsville and mm-hmm. McHenry, but if you go to Rosine, you go for music.
One thing I noticed in my research, there's an atlas over at Western's Library, and it shows the migration pattern of this county. And part of it is the same migration pattern that was in Appalachia. And the thing that intrigued me was it came on down the Pennyroyal into that region and dipped into just a portion of Ohio County. It kind of comes like this and goes back up. And the best, Connie Mills and I spent a half day trying to figure out exactly where that strip is. And to the best we could figure, it would be the Rosine and the fringe areas. And it's kind of interesting because the music is basically the same, very similar to the Appalachian music. And the ethnic background of the people is the same. It's the same migration pattern. And that's the only thing I can come up with that would even be a clue.
I don't know just when Rosine was settled.
Well, according to the paper, when the railroad camp was in there, it was about 1857 or so. Mm-hmm. And then I think the post office was established a couple of years before they switched the name to Rosine and made the corporation. So I would say it was in the mid-1850s from the railroad camps.
Well, Wendell always has that in his, and I have it in my files, all that, I'm sure. But Hartford came in, the people came in here from, Bill Smothers and some of the early settlers, and the Rounds came in. From the Virginias and the Carolinas. And this town was settled as a fort in 1782.
Were those people more English than Irish?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Maybe that's part of the difference, because to me, when you read about the Scotch-Irish,
mm-hmm.
you see a lot of those characteristics still up there.
Mm-hmm.
I call my husband's farm the frontier. Mm-hmm. I started doing it because I felt like I stepped back in time 50 years. To me, it's the last of the frontier still in existence, that little bit up there. But you know, I started it out just in fun, but the more I've studied it, the more I'm convinced that it is kind of the last of what used to be. And
uh-huh.
and you can see so much of the characteristics of the Scotch-Irish people up there, but I don't see it here. And when I interview people, there are a lot of English. Some of them don't know their ethnicity at all.
Mm-hmm.
And others will say Scotch-Irish, German, and English. Those are the predominant ones.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of American Indian here, too. A lot. Cherokee.
But now Pigeon Roost and the Schultzes and different ones I know that we have read about, the dance that was at this home, you know, of the Schultzes and the girls and the peddler that had the marrow, you've heard that story.
Mm-hmm.
Now that was over in close to the Rosine area, and this William Duval, who was called Ringwood by Irving, hunted in here, you know,
mm-hmm.
From Bardstown. He was going to study law at Bardstown, and he liked to hunt. And he hunted with Smothers and the Schultzes and the different ones, Matthias Schultz and Tickeye John Miller, but quite frequently and quite over a period of some several months or years, I don't know, but he fell in love. You've heard about the stolen kiss there at the old Talbert Inn.
Oh, no. Oh, yes, I have. Yes, I have. Years ago, yeah.
Uh-huh. And he later married this girl, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he passed by and saw her, and he just had to have a kiss. I thought that was so cute.
So romantic. Uh-huh. I've noticed, too, people around here are romantic. I like that.
I think so. That's the South, I guess.
Well, to me,
Belle type.
Well, you're from the South. I'm from Kentucky, but you're really from the South. Uh-huh. I'm a border state person. But to me, their romanticism is similar to the South. It's not as genteel. It does, you know, the South is genteel, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're both romantic, but I think the South, like Alabama, Georgia, and Louisiana, would be more genteel.
But you think of the singing and the balconies and the hoop skirts and those things,
yes,
you know, that are, and magnolia trees.
Mm-hmm.
And but yes, the people are more inclined to be. Well, I guess Kentucky and Alabama and Tennessee, they all have their different personalities, but yet they're all romantic, you know. And
but I think this county is much more romantic than Owensboro.
Oh, I do too.
There is, most people in Owensboro are not romanticists. If we're going to talk about them in general, we know that there's a subgroup of romanticists. Mm-hmm. There always is. But you don't get this flowery, moonlit struck that you do here. And then I say to myself, well, is that because I fell in love here? You know, is it really that way, or is it just because of my own experience?
Yeah.
I've often wondered about that too.
But I don't know, they're more business or I don't know.
I think they have a certain coldness.
Mm-hmm.
But now, when I was growing up, I don't think Owensboro was that way. I think it became that way when they brought the industries and the colleges in there.
Yes.
When I was a young girl, Owensboro was not much bigger than this.
It was much more friendly.
Mm-hmm.
You enjoyed shopping. The clerks had all the time in the world for you. And they would speak to you on the street, and there was more of a friendly atmosphere when you'd go into Walgreens, drugstore, mm-hmm. and different places. You know?
I think so. I've noticed a big difference in it.
And even in the courthouse, it was different.
Mm-hmm.
Now, no one speaks to anyone. I guess small towns are still used, I mean, they're more friendly. Because they know everyone and they speak, but Owensboro has grown so much more. It's
mm-hmm.
becoming so metropolitan in so many areas.
Oh, well, that's true too.
Uh-huh. It's it has to tends to be more cold shoulder.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I'm going to move this tape. It's getting to the end here. Part that doesn't record. Okay, now then, you told me that you taught school at Mount Pleasant. Would you share that story with me?
Well, it was a very unique experience for me because I had never been in a one-room school before. And I went in there to teach, and there were these students, all ages, and the benches in there, and they sat down and as if to expect me to tell them exactly what they wanted me to do, and I really had to find out from them what I was to do. Then they would come up with the book, and without saying anything to me, they would leave a book at the door and they would go out. Pretty soon I found out that was their way of letting me know they were out to the outhouse, the boys and the girls. And I had never seen that before. But they were very sweet children, I remember that. They were they were impressed with me because I was a new teacher, and they wanted to maybe be the teacher's pet or what. They were always offering to help me or to show me, you know, to help me go get the water when we really didn't need a water bucket filled. But it was quite an experience, and we would have, we had 8 grades that we taught in that one room each day. So maybe 2 or 3 students of each grade and different ages. And some of the children needed shoes and socks. It was in the winter time. And so we brought, I got some here from the church and all, and we took them to them, and they were so appreciative of that. And and they looked like it made them feel closer to me. They would look at me as if, you know, I like you, or thank you, you know.
About what year was this?
This was, let me see, about 54, in the 53 or 54, I believe. But I just fell in love with it, and I had heard of one room schools before, and my parents had taught in one room schools, and but I had never even.
Well, most of your students then, they were in. Were they walking to school?
Yes, I don't believe they rode a bus, but they would go out and ring the bell for the lunch or recess and things like that. You know, they took over. They knew I was a stranger in the house.
And they knew what to do, and they were teaching
did.
You.
Uh-huh.
Well, were most of the parents working, or were they farming, or?
They were all farmers, as far as I know, in that area. I don't know. I didn't see the parents. I don't think they rode buses. That's been some time ago. Most of the students from the neighborhood.
Well, I know when I've been interviewing Lovie, she stated that as time went on and the roads improved, the buses could come to a certain point. But even later, in later years, the kids, even though they weren't going to Mount Pleasant, would go to Mount Pleasant to catch the bus. They would have to walk from their homes. You know, the buses couldn't get on the small roads.
I don't remember a bus inside while I was there.
Well, so you were there before the buses, probably.
Mm-hmm. Just the neighborhood children, I expect.
Was it about an equal mix of boys and girls?
Yes. And, there were. And in all age, some of them were, older. I mean, they hadn't been promoted like they should have been, maybe, or hadn't learned or what. But they were pretty well disciplined children.
Mm-hmm.
They were very helpful, and I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it.
Did they? Did it appear to be that they hadn't been exposed to the material, or they didn't have the ability to comprehend the material?
I think they just didn't have the ability to comprehend some of the material. But we went slowly, and I was very patient with them, and we would, I remember one boy, I don't remember his name or even what he looked like, but he was older than he should have been to be in that class. But he was a slow learner, but he wanted to learn, you know. And I repeated and repeated and until I could see he was getting it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
what was the typical dress?
They wore dresses. The girls and the boys wore overalls and plaid shirts. That was before the girls wore jeans and pants so much, you know. But they wore their little dresses. Most of them were a little bit longer. Shoes and socks or stockings.
Did you notice any extra attention to music in the school with these kids?
I did not, and we didn't have anything. I don't think we sang a song.
Well, today, Lovie and Uncle Sam were telling me about at some point in time there would be revivals at Mount Pleasant that would last for a week or more.
Uh-huh.
And then toward the end of the revival, then they'd have a week of noon revivals. Which I've not ever heard of a day revival.
I haven't.
And they would dismiss school at 11, and then the kids would go to church.
Go to church.
And they'd sing the rest of the day.
How about that? No, that
wasn't. Was interesting.
Uh-huh. Did they have a church there near the Mount Pleasant School?
Yes, it's right across the road.
Okay.
The original church was, if you were coming on Mount Pleasant Road, if you were at the school and going down that hill headed toward Rosine, The original church was back on one of those, I call it valleys, where Lovie lives. That's where they had the original Brush Harbor when the church was founded. And then later, in later years, they built a log cabin church. I got intrigued with that. And let me see, they tore it down, and then they built two other frame structures, and they burned. And then they replaced this one in the 80s.
Mount Pleasant School is still there,
yes,
the building.
They're using it to, they had tobacco stored in it for homecoming.
One of the members of our historical society is very much interested in getting an old original log, if possible, or some old school, one-room school, for our museum grounds.
Oh, it would be good.
And to have teachers take classes down to the one-room school to teach them the way...
That would be fun, like a living museum.
Yes, and we wouldn't necessarily have to have a floor. We could use a dirt floor, you know, or what.
Do you want me to ask Uncle Sam who has the building, or do you know?
I have had different ones calling Bill Leach and Earl Russell and different ones about these one-room schools, where one might be available. I heard something about this Mount Pleasant School. I don't know. Are they going to keep it?
I don't know who owns it. You see, the cemetery is away from the church. I found out how that all happened, too, but there's a big difference. You know, usually the church and the cemetery are pretty close, but they're not. They're a long way from each other. Now, I don't know if the school is on the church grounds or if someone else, if that's a separate deed. But I can find that out if you want me to find out.
Well, Mr. Leach, I believe it was Bill Leach or someone, said that most of the people on the ground where the schools exist or remain, and that we would have to get permission from them because the school board does not own any of those schools.
Well, now, whoever... I don't know who's in charge of the building, but someone had tobacco stored in there this year. Because I've been to two homecomings up there. And this year, many people, the younger ones, expressed that they wished that there hadn't been any tobacco in there so they could walk around, because a lot of them had gone to school in that building.
Well, I sure would like to have it.
But Uncle Sam Crowder, you know, his family's been there. His daddy was the song leader there from 1910 to 1975.
At the church.
At Mount Pleasant, yes. And, of course, Lovie's people, the Parks, were, I consider them almost founding fathers. And their membership is small, you know, maybe five or six, but they have a participation probably of 15 to 20 a Sunday. But it shouldn't be any problem to find out. And, honestly, I don't see how the church is going to continue. The membership's old. And at the homecomings, Steve and I were among the younger people there, and the grandchildren and the great-grandchildren are not expressing any sort of interest in it. And to me, I would be delighted that the building be moved for historical preservation here rather than just watch it disintegrate.
Yeah.
But I don't know who owns it, but if you want me to, I'll ask him.
Okay, I'd be glad for you to. Because, we were told that the people that own the land, you know, it would be up to them if they wanted to let us have the school.
As a matter of fact, Lovie has the deed. She has a statement about the property being deeded for the church, and I read it on the tape recorder to preserve that. And we know who gave the ground for the cemetery, and the school may be included on that.
Yeah.
On that deed, they may have said for church and school.
May have been.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have to be a different deed if we did that. No, not necessarily for the school. We could take the building off, but the grounds could be used maybe for the cemetery too, if you needed to expand that.
Well, they're so far away. The cemetery's at least a mile away down
from
the hill.
Church. School.
Mm-hmm. So, but that would be great from my perspective. Because to me, one thing I don't like about interviewing people, it's sad, I think. I noticed Lovie today, and I noticed it before, you know, that you get to reflecting about those times. And then when you see the place that used to be so full of life and activity and lots of people on those hills, lots of kids, lots of church activities,
mm-hmm.
and now they're just barely holding together. As a matter of fact, she and Uncle Sam said several years ago, the association, the Methodist hierarchy or whatever you call them, told them that they couldn't have another preacher. And Lovie's husband said the doors would remain open. And so they ended up sending him a preacher. But they pay this guy $65 a month to preach every other Sunday. And these people are not people of means. I mean, they're, to me, they're making a sacrifice to keep the church open. And I really admire that.
Mm-hmm.
But also, way down deep, they know that it's not going to keep on coming. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that's bringing the young people back or attracting them to that kind of service.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it might be they would just be very delighted to be able to participate in a historical mm-hmm. preservation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that would be nice if we could... We would really like to have one. We don't have a lot of space. Mm-hmm. I don't remember.
It may be two rooms. I'm not sure about that.
Well, it was just one room, I think, when I was there.
Well, it may, you know, it may
I
be.
Say,
it's a big building.
I know it. And that would be one of the things that we'd have to consider, because we're kind of limited for space here. We have a log mm-hmm. cabin, and I have a country store.
Yes.
You'll have to come through that sometime.
Okay, well, I've walked it when there hasn't been anybody around.
Oh, the museum here.
Mm-hmm.
But where do you live now?
I really don't know. Steve and I live back toward Renfro. If you're at Mount Pleasant, I live, I would say, 5 miles from Mount Pleasant, like you're going to Horse Branch.
Okay.
That's my general vicinity.
Is that on 505?
You go 505 and then you turn onto what they used to call Renfro Road. I don't know if they've changed the names of everything. And then there's a Church of Christ, I believe. There's a church right on the corner as the road curves. And you go back a gravel road about a mile, and that's where we live. So, I'm close. As the bird flies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's stop for now, and thank you.